Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage takes the frustrations out of getting a mortgage by letting you safely share your financial information with the touch of a button. Get approved online in minutes at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you all this week from Cleveland and the Republican National Convention. Welcome to day three of our live coverage. The gavel is about to come down inside the arena. Ted Cruz is up tonight. Ooh, that should be interesting. Hardcore conservative, lost to Donald Trump. Mike Pence is up, Trump's running mate. Hardcore conservative all the way. But what about Donald Trump? He's all over the place. Orthodox nothing, certainly no orthodox conservative. So what does that mean for the GOP and maybe the country? This hour On Point, live from Cleveland, Republicans and conservatism in the time of Trump. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is Donald Trump a conservative or not? Is he even close? Do you care? Conservative Republican voters, is Mike Pence enough? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And welcome to those watching us live tonight on Facebook. Facebook Live, we're live streaming video there right now at On Point Radio. Check it out. We got a great lineup with us here in Cleveland. Glenn Thrush, chief political correspondent for Politico and host of the podcast Off Messages here. It is terrific. Glenn, it's great to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Eliana Johnson, Washington editor for the National Review, is with us. Eliana, it's always great to see you. Welcome.
Great to see you.
And Mark Murray, senior politics editor for NBC News, is taking time out to join us here in Cleveland. Mark, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. The sound of Mike Pence. This is a real conservative. He wears a button-down shirt, short sleeve, and tie. And, I mean, he's social conservative. He's the whole package. Here he was this week in Cleveland talking with the American Conservative Union Foundation yesterday.
When we come together as a party and a people, we re-elect strong conservative majorities in the House and the Senate and elect this good man as the 45th president of the United States. I know in my heart of hearts we will make America great again.
This good man. But what's conservative here and what's not? Paul Ryan knows what's conservative, and it is, Mike Pence, not Donald Trump. Mike Pence.
This is a man who has the courage of his convictions. So we have here a very, very good leader, a willing conservative, a knowledgeable conservative, a real Reagan-like happy warrior joining this ticket. And so I'm excited that you're going to get to know Mike Pence.
Is Donald Trump a conservative? I don't know. Is he a Mike Pence conservative? In April, he was at a live taping in New York with NBC's Matt Lauer, your colleague Mark Murray. Matt Lauer, you'll hear him ask about his take on transgender bathrooms. I don't know what culture warrior Mike Pence would have to say about this. Here's Lauer, then Trump.
If Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses.
That is correct.
Okay, where does this come down? Eliana, we've got Mike Pence and we've got Donald Trump, and now they're in one bag. It's one ticket. How does this fit together? Does it fit together at all? This is rock solid, hardcore conservative Mike Pence and Donald Trump, who's all over the place.
Right. Donald Trump, clearly not a conservative, but I think what the primary season showed is that ideological conservatives are a minority in the Republican Party. Conservatism, ideologically, has always been something different from the Republican Party. It captured the party with Reagan, and the question, I think, going forward is what role does conservative ideology play in the Republican Party? Mike Pence, when he was in Congress and as governor of Indiana, always liked to say that he was a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican
in that order.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is his favorite thing to say. And I think a lot of people are shocked by his willingness to associate with Trump and are really saying that he has sacrificed conservatism at the altar of the Republican Party, accusing him sort of betraying the ideology for really what has been its vehicle. The party is just really the vehicle for the ideology.
Mark Murray, if the Republican Party is not conservative in the way that we've known, and it's certainly not Jeb Bush is not standing up there, so it's not that kind of conservative at the moment. Ted Cruz is not standing up there as the nominee, though he'll be speaking tonight, and we'll talk with you, Glenn. You just talked with him, with Ted Cruz. What is the GOP if it's not the conservative party? What is it?
That's a great question. And actually, it's been a chaotic moment in the Republican Party. I'd actually argue going back to 2008 when John McCain was at this point about to accept the Republican nomination. And the fight over that point was on immigration. And what are the most consistent issues that Donald Trump has had so far in this election cycle? And you mentioned that quote on transgender bathrooms where Donald Trump's all over the place. He's all over the place when it comes to taxes. But he's been consistent when it comes to the Muslim ban. He's been consistent when it comes to trade. And
Donald Trump. But consistently not free trade, which is a pillar of Republican conservatism.
Correct. But there is an argument to be made, and people, you know, if Donald Trump ends up losing this election, and we don't know how the next 3.5 months are going to play out, there still will be a huge debate on what the Republican Party is, and is the Republican Party really a conservative party, or is it even a little bit of a bigger tent? I mean, do remember that even before Goldwater and all the way up into the 1980s, the Republican Party was made up of conservatives. It was made up of Rockefeller Republicans. Mm-hmm. It was actually made up of Texas Democrats.
Something who were much more textured.
And when you start looking also at the country's changing demographics, there is a choice on it. If the Republican Party wants to start winning presidential elections, and if they end up losing a third consecutive and come 2020, a fourth consecutive, on how do they become a majority political party in presidential contests by just being a conservative party. And again, I think you're going to see several different strains. Donald Trump's coming from one angle, Pence another, other politicians, but I find that fascinating.
We had a Florida delegate who came by just before you guys sat down here tonight, and she said to us, the Republican Party is dead. She said, we are now the Orange Party, Trump's party. We are populist. Ted Cruz, that drove him crazy. I mean, he was sort of pinning the needle on conservatism. You remember back in January, went after Donald Trump as New York values. And what were those? Here was Cruz in debate.
Everyone understands that the values in New York City are socially liberal or pro-abortion or pro-gay marriage, focus around money and the media. And I guess I can frame it another way. Not a lot of conservatives come out of Manhattan. I'm just saying.
He's just saying. Glenn Frush, on your podcast, Off Message, you sat down with Ted Cruz just a few days ago.
Yes.
Now, he was beaten and beaten badly. He was insulted by Donald Trump. He went after his wife's body. He went after, said his father had a role somehow in the JFK assassination. But he's going to stand up there tonight. I mean, it's one thing. I'm curious to see exactly what Mike Pence says. But what is Ted Cruz going to say at that podium? Is he going to endorse Donald Trump?
Well, look, he might endorse him. We had Paul Manafort, who is Trump's de facto campaign manager this morning, say that he's going to suggest he's going to endorse him. I personally have never seen that before. It'd be interesting to kind of see. Look, I think Ted Cruz is in an interesting position. There's one prism and one prism alone by which he is viewing his performance tonight, and that is the 2020 Republican nomination for president. Cruz cares about running for president. He is staking all on the fact that Donald Trump will either lose or be a one-term president, and that he will be the guy standing at the center of the stage for the Republican Party in 2020.
What's the premise there? That Donald Trump loses, or that he's a one-term quasi-Republican president, and then Republicans snap back to Ted Cruz conservatism?
Exactly. It's the same premise that Paul Ryan had in giving his speech. Donald Trump is renting this hall. These guys think they own it. And to a certain extent, Cruz believes that you are going to have the party right now. You guys are just talking about what the Republican Party really is. And obviously, we're in this big existential moment. I view it as two things, right? It is a repository for a certain demographic, older and white. But in a larger sense, I think what it is an aggregation of grievance. These are people who have been out of power, out of presidential power, for 8 years. They feel that the world is getting away from them. They think the policy prescriptions of the Obama administration, particularly on immigration, and the projection, not the use of force, but the projection of power in the world has moved backwards. This is a party that feels as if they are personally losing control of their own future and destiny, and that the United States is adrift in the world.
Eliana, can they ever go back after there were 17, and then there was one, and it was Donald Trump, as none of the others, and there were many conservatives up there of all different stripes? Can they go back and be that again, or has Donald Trump revealed something about the American electorate that's just not going to follow the GOP back into that we love conservatism box?
I think most of the other candidates, most of the other 2016 candidates, are making a bet internally that Trump is a transitory phenomenon as a human being. But I do think there will be tremendous debate after this election about what Trump revealed ideologically and what sorts of reformations, if any, that conservatives, the party, needs to make. Does it abandon immigration reform, for example, something that Paul Ryan is a great champion of? Does it become...
Meaning immigration reform that would allow some kind of inflow as opposed to the wall.
Exactly. Did Donald Trump speak to a much more restrictionist sentiment in the electorate? This is a debate I think that we'll see play out between somebody like Tom Cotton, who's an ardent immigration restrictionist, and people like Paul Ryan and Marco Rubio. Did Trump reveal things about our foreign policy, a feeling that we need to pull back from abroad, and things mm-hmm. like that? I think these are really issues that the party did not grapple with adequately in the wake of the Bush presidency, which touched on some of these issues. Immigration, the war in Iraq touched on what America should role
Trump saying
be
that
in
was a mistake.
Policy.
That was a mistake.
Exactly.
But he's also saying I would go and bomb the Bahuzi out of ISIS.
Well, I don't think Trump has much of an ideology. His view is you can have your cake and eat it too. You can get rid of ISIS through a bombing campaign. Cruz essentially said the same thing on the campaign. This isn't a deeply thought out view of what the country's role should be in the world. When he says America first, I don't believe he actually knows what the historical implications of the term are.
The isolationist,
but essentially,
history.
We put our own people first, and I think that the party is going to grapple with what exactly that means and how to communicate that with voters in a way that draws more people into the party. I think Paul Ryan has a very different understanding of how to do that than somebody like Tom Cotton.
It's a kind of a mystery bag, Glenn. I mean, people are responding to it, and the big themes are clearly resonating. But you look for detail.
Well, look, what he has really understood, which no other candidate did in this cycle and hasn't in a long time, is that it's an emotional imperative for the Republicans, not a policy imperative.
An emotional imperative for the Republicans. We're talking tonight about Republicans and conservatism in the age of Donald Trump. What survives, what gets dumped in the age of Trump? Glenn Thrush is with us, chief political correspondent for Politico, host of Politico's podcast Off Message. Eliana Johnson is here, Washington editor for the National Review. What was your headline on the cover? Never Trump or...
Against Trump.
Against Trump, yeah, just that. And Mark Murray is here, senior political editor for NBC News. Listeners, you can join us. Is Donald Trump a conservative? Of a kind? Any kind? Do you care at all? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Republicans and conservatism in the time of Donald Trump. What survives of the GOP as we've known it in the recent couple of decades anyway? What gets dumped in the age of Trump? Glenn Thrush is with us from Politico, Eliana Johnson from the National Review, Mark Murray is here, senior political editor for NBC News, and you can join us too. What do you think? Is Donald Trump a conservative? What kind? Any kind? Any familiar kind? He bashes free trade. He says he'll protect entitlements. He's been all over the map on social issues. Is he conservative? Do you care? And how do you explain how Trump beat 16 true blue conservatives, Tea Party conservatives, establishment conservatives, in the primaries? We were talking about Caitlyn Jenner before. She can go anywhere in Trump Tower, Donald Trump says. Caitlyn Jenner was in Cleveland, I think today, at a brunch outside the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this morning, and responded to a reporter who asked her about getting more pushback from being a Republican than from being transgender.
It was easy to come out as trans. It was harder to come out as Republican. Okay? Yeah.
Come out as Republican than transgender. Mike Pence is talking tonight. He's center stage on this third night of the Republican convention on 60 Minutes on Sunday. He was there describing his full faith in Donald Trump as a future president.
Talking with him in private settings, I love the words you used, because this man is awed with the American people, and he is not intimidated by the world. And Donald Trump, this good man, I believe, will be a great president of the United States.
This good man, great president, he's no Mike Pence. He was also on 60 Minutes, of course, all over 60 Minutes. Here he was talking about the advantages of having Mike Pence on the ticket.
I have seen more people that, frankly, did not like me so much, and now they're saying, what a great pick. You see the kind of reaction. He has helped bring the party together.
Donald Trump on 60 Minutes. Mark Murray, if you were to sort of go down the checklist of where Mike Pence and the positions he has taken historically might or might not line up with Donald Trump, what would that look like side by side?
Oh, tons of minuses. I can't remember, since I've been covering politics in 2000, where you've had a Republican presidential nominee and the vice presidential nominee on so many fundamental different places on key issues. Trade, of course, is one of them. Mike Pence was for NAFTA, for the TPP trade agreement. Donald Trump, of course, against them. Mike Pence supported and voted for the Iraq War. Donald Trump on the campaign trail, against it. And so on these really fundamental issues, and again, you and I were talking about how trade is such a crux in Donald Trump's message, particularly against Hillary Clinton, how you could have a vice presidential running mate be at odds with you. Normally, well, it could be one issue, maybe two, but up and down the line, there is a big disagreement. And to Glenn's point earlier, you know, we're either to define conservatism, is it about ideas, and is it about how you use a tax code and marginal tax rates, mm-hmm. or is it about the politics of grievance and about what is some where the person who is the loudest and the shouts, the, you know, the who gets the attention, is that conservatism or is it about the ideas? And I do think that that is a fundamental debate the party's been having.
Eliana Johnson, did you think a year ago that the sort of bridal of more orthodox conservatism that the conservatives had gotten on to the GOP for quite a while, and did you think that that could come off? Did you think it could slip? Did you think it might, you know, the horse might just break free in the form of Donald Trump and leave that behind? Did you have any inkling that things were that fragile for the conservative grip on the top of the party?
I had no idea, and I don't really think anybody predicted what that Trump would rise to the top the way that he did. But I think that conservatism, since National Review was founded in 1955, has made a couple of claims. One is that ideas matter, ideas are important, and the movement was intended to be a check on Republican politicians, and that character matters. And I know that my colleagues on the editorial side of National Review have been saying that they understand politicians are in a different line of business, but for others to stand beside Donald Trump, a man unarguably of imperfect character, really for conservatives is to abandon arguments against people like Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton.
Because,
arguments
what,
that were made
three
in the 90s.
He's bragged about adultery. He's had bankruptcy. I don't know. Business people have bankruptcies, but
the way he's conducted himself on the campaign trail, mm-hmm. and spoken about his opponents, the way he's conducted his business affairs, mm-hmm. without any sort of honesty, but you sort of give up the right to make that argument against others and against Democrats like Hillary Clinton.
Do you really? I've seen an awful lot of going after Hillary Clinton already this week. It doesn't seem like there's any shortage of firepower there or willingness, readiness.
Well, I think politicians operate at a different level than do journalists, commentators, mm-hmm. They have a different job, but I do think it's difficult for commentators on the sidelines to say, I don't think Trump is better than Hillary is an adequate argument for opinion journalists to make. So I think that's what you're seeing conservatives on the outside grapple with.
So what's the strategy, Glenn? I mean, we had Paul Ryan up there last night, and he's painting. Maybe this is a little preview of some version of what we'll get from Cruz. He's painting a vision of the conservative America that he'd like to see and all of its advantages. And then he's just talking positively about Trump, sort of, but not scarcely naming him. Do they think that they can put Trump in the White House to sign off on legislation and then run a different, completely different, huge skunk works on Capitol Hill, which would be a Republican-controlled, potentially, Congress,
and somehow that works together? They can untether from Trump?
Yes. Next question. No, I mean,
is there precedent for that?
You threw an interesting word out there that I haven't heard much this week or seen evidence of. Yeah. That word was strategy.
Yeah.
There's a certain feral nature to this convention. I expect to see a cat wander sometimes across the party. There is a sense.
Run wild? What?
Yesterday was supposed to be a day. Actually, there is a certain consistency in what's been happening, I'd say. A little bit. But yesterday was supposed to be a day that was about discussing economics, jobs, and work. There was very little discussion of that. The most effective speech, arguably, was Chris Christie's full frontal attack on Hillary Clinton and foreign policy.
Yeah.
But what I think we're seeing here, and I think the transition to Pence, and it's why it's a weird juxtaposition to have Pence on tonight with Cruz, particularly. What they tried to do halfway through last night with the introduction of the family was to humanize Donald Trump. You heard that in the Pence clip. Mm-hmm. Pence is a moral validator, a nice guy validator. Trump wants to be infected by decency by being around this guy.
Yeah.
And Pence's main job on this ticket, and I think we saw it in the 60 Minutes interview, we're going to see it again tonight, is to portray this guy, is to tell the American people, the Donald Trump I see when I'm sitting alone in private, totally nicer, totally different than the one that you see on the stump. So what we are looking at here, insofar as this is becoming a coherent convention, it has nothing to do with policy, it has nothing to do with the programming of the convention. It seems to me, and it's appropriate, that all roads right now are leading to Donald Trump's main political problem, and that is he is the most unliked major party presidential mm-hmm. candidate in the history of polling.
I mean, on the first night, though, it certainly wasn't about kissy face. You heard Rudy Giuliani up there. You heard the general up there. They were pretty hard-edged. Chris Christie last night, pretty hard-edged. I don't know if that makes Donald Trump more likable. But is that really the most important thing for Mike Pence? I mean, then he ends up being a kind of beard. Here's this guy who's not really conservative. He is super conservative, and he's going to come out and sort of sing a song of love and admiration for him, even though he knows they don't line up at all?
I am old enough to remember 2010, when the entirety of the Republican...
Is that old?
That's right. I feel that old. When the entirety of the Republican Party was aimed at one goal, and that was deficit reduction. How many times during debates did you hear about deficit reduction this time? This is not about ideology. This
almost
is about
not at all. And last night, a night about economy, I heard almost nothing about economy. So
it's about candidate definition, and they have got a stinker... They've got a stinker of a product right now that they are trying to rehabilitate.
But I want to stick with the strategy idea for a second, Mark. If it's more than just painting him as a nice guy, I mean that was Tiffany Trump's job, and she did pretty well at that. I must say, he's wrote on all my report cards, and he's mm-hmm. a wonderful guy. But if it's more than that, what is it? How do they envision if Donald Trump should win? And here they've got maybe the Congress, maybe not. And he's down on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. What's the relationship? If he doesn't buy their ideology, if he doesn't buy the way Mike Pence would want to take the country, they think he'll just come around? He doesn't seem like a guy who takes the bit very easily.
I think it was a marriage of necessity. And you have to look at the context of when Mike Pence was chosen as Trump's running mate. And that was when there was a small but still existential threat that he might not get the nomination here in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think of everything that Paul Manafort and the high command of the Trump campaign was trying to do was to make sure that Donald Trump didn't lose on the convention floor, that there wasn't some type of minority vote that would actually imperil his nomination. Mm-hmm. The Mike Pence makes so much sense because you end up getting perhaps the most conservative person who is willing to say yes to Donald Trump to be his vice presidential running mate. And then flowing from that, all the other decisions that the Trump campaign has made outside of their ability to quash that convention floor fight seem so haphazard. The rollout was a mess. Everything, the speeches weren't vetted. But the one thing that Paul Manafort and the Trump campaign got right was they squashed the rebellion on the floor. And I think without Mike Pence, that actually would have been more problematic for them.
Trump strategy. But what is conservative strategy? If Paul Ryan is a conservative, if Mitch McConnell is a conservative, and we know these guys, Mitch McConnell plays a long game, a long, quiet game. Paul Ryan's no fool. Do you have any sense of how they're thinking about, well, what would we do? We're going to set him up to win. We want a Republican down there. But then what? If he's not really cut from their, mold?
I would make 2 points. The first is, one thing I found fascinating about this convention is that you hear far more talk about how bad Hillary Clinton is than about how wonderful Donald Trump is, because I don't think that Republicans with any self-respect feel that they can make the case, apart from Trump's immediate family. The second point I would make to your question, Tom, is that the Republican Party right now and conservatives are really a party. It's a party of squabbling disunity, because the key figures in the party all have different visions of what it will be. Mitch McConnell is thinking about keeping a Senate majority. I don't think he's thinking much further than that. Paul Ryan is a reform conservative that wants to soften the edges of the Republican Party. Somebody like Tom Cotton has a very different vision of the party.
But Mike Pence, who's going to be, who is the running mate, if memory serves, didn't he go after George W. Bush in a pretty hard way when Bush, you know, did things that were quite minor in a stepping away from, you know, down the line conservatism compared to what Donald Trump's proposing?
Right. Well, Mike Pence, I don't believe will be a player in the Republican Party or the conservative movement going forward.
He'll be off at the Naval Observatory and the vice president's residence, heading out to funerals abroad.
Due to his association with Trump, I think you can say Mike Pence had a wonderful future behind him.
Maybe he's the mole. We've got callers for the three of you. Eliana Johnson, Glenn Thrush, Mark Murray. Deborah is calling from Statesville, North Carolina. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Hi, Tom. What a segue right into what I have to say. I think he is a demagogue who will say anything to get into the presidency. And once he gets there, he is not going to listen to what anyone else has to say. He is going to do exactly what he wants to do. And that is what causes my greatest concern about him. I have followed him and done my research on him, and he's a bully. He just runs over anybody and everybody, and I'm concerned that Congress isn't going to be able to keep control over him, and these people who say, oh, well, he'll have advisors and they will be able to advise him. No, no, no. Donald Trump doesn't take advice from anybody.
Deborah, we've got it. I appreciate your call. I appreciate it very much, from North Carolina. Glenn, how does this work? Is there precedent for this? We see very clearly how it works when you got one party on Capitol Hill and Barack Obama of a different party in the White House. But what if you have Republicans on Capitol Hill and a unorthodox Republican, really unorthodox, in the White House? How does it work?
I think this speaks directly to the question that you had about the conservative movement. How does it continue and reconcile itself with Trump? Donald Trump doesn't give a damn about the details. I think the feeling that Ryan in particular has, and I know McConnell does too, is that they are going to fill in his blanks. It's like Mad Libs. That they are going to provide, and I did a podcast with Ryan about 2 months ago in which he basically explicitly said this. I am creating a program, a compassionate conservative program that you can plug and play when Donald Trump takes over.
Because Donald Trump won't want to care about the details, so he'll let Paul and Mitch do your thing?
Exactly. This description that you just gave of his fungibility on the issues, the fact that he kind of moves so liquidly from position to position, they view as his greatest asset because they'll be able to program him.
So he'll be the dauphin or whatever, and they'll be behind the curtain. I mean, maybe he will himself triangulate in his own Trumpian way toward them. This was on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl. Yeah, maybe. This was Leslie Stahl on Sunday. Mike Pence, who in the past supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership, North American Free Trade Agreement, Trump has been very tough on both of those. She asked him if he would stand by Trump on trade.
I support free trade, and so does Donald Trump.
Not really.
I do. Oh, no, I'm free trade, but I want to make good deals. No. I'm all for free trade.
You talk about
I'm not an isolationist. A lot of people think because I want to make good deals,
you want to undo these
people.
Agreements.
These are stupid people that think that. I want to make great deals for our country.
Okay, what is it, Mark? Does he want to blow these up? Is it no or yes? Or is this him? Is this the sound of Donald Trump? How he would accommodate himself to his party?
It's a candidate without any specifics at all when it comes to policy. And going back again, this is a candidate who is more guttural than wonk, This is somebody who, at the end of the day, says, I just want to make good deals, but never is able to fill in any of the blanks at all. Going back to the caller's question, I mean, I think there are two models when it comes to our separation of powers. And one actually plays in Paul Ryan's home state of Wisconsin, where you end up seeing a very powerful state legislature essentially force Governor Scott Walker to sign legislation after legislation yes. after such. And really the most dominant driver was the legislature, not Governor Scott Walker. But on the other hand, you could end up seeing, just look at this convention right now, where you have an entire Republican Party that is almost bowing to Donald Trump. And the question is, if he's in the White House, what ends up happening? But Paul Ryan, on issue after issue, policy after policy, has basically had to go back and reverse himself. And here he is speaking at Donald Trump's convention. And I don't know which model is actually going to end up playing out, but it is a great, what the caller's hitting at is a real fear that conservatives, Republicans, Democrats all have.
What breeds now? Are there going to be a bunch of mini Trumps coming into the GOP and the conservatism just ages out?
Look, that's the seminal question here. The thing is, this guy is, he's not a black swan. He's like a tangerine swan.
That's what our delegate said. It's the orange party now.
I guess the question is whether or not people can emulate this, but he's a one-of-a-kind talent.
Maybe. Or maybe we're in an age of populism and something fundamental is changing. People saying, well, would the Republican Party even survive it? They're here tonight in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention, and we're here as well with Glenn Thrush of Politico, Eliana Johnson of the National Review, and Mark Murray, senior political editor for NBC News. Listeners, you can join us tonight. What does Donald Trump know? What does he get that GOP conservatives apparently do not? And how is he married three times, bragged about adultery, said Caitlyn Jenner can use any bathroom in Trump Tower, and still won Christian conservatives? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century. Forget about digging through stacks of paperwork. This completely online process lets you safely share your bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button. Using a phone or tablet, you can get approved for purchase or refinance in just a few minutes. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Republicans and conservatism in the age of Donald Trump. We are live from Cleveland, where the Republican convention is well underway. Mike Pence will speak tonight. Newt Gingrich will speak tonight. Marco Rubio will be there by video. Ted Cruz will be talking tonight. The man who got kind of bitterly beaten by Donald Trump. We're joined tonight by Mark Murray, senior political editor for NBC News, Eliana Johnson, Washington editor for the National Review, and Glenn Thrush, chief political correspondent for Politico. You can join us as well. What do you think? Does Trump's fluidity, when it comes to, is that the word we use when it comes to ideology, does it make him more appealing in the general election because he can't be boxed in? Does having Mike Pence up there take the edge off for conservatives? Will Ted Cruz take his head off tonight or next year or in 2020. There were shocked Republicans who couldn't believe that this guy, with his way off the reservation view of ideology, could be so potent. Here was Jeb Bush talking with Chuck Todd of NBC in January about a recent debate and his, Jeb Bush's, criticism of Donald Trump, the kind of tariffs he wants to put on Chinese goods and all the rest.
We talked about the 45% tariff that he has been advocating that would create a global depression and lay people off and create hardship. Retaliated by the Chinese and making sure that we couldn't sell our Boeing planes that are being made a mile away from where the debate took place. I had my chance, and I was the only person that goes after Trump on these issues. He's not a conservative.
He's not a conservative. Did Donald Trump care about that? No, not exactly. He's got Mike Pence up there now. He'll be speaking tonight. But here was Donald Trump Jr. talking with reporters in Cleveland today, saying many people are telling him that his father is the first Republican they will be voting for.
They're saying, and we're voting for him because we're sick of the nonsense. We're sick of it. And these are not people that have ever voted for Republican before, but they're going to do it because they know he's going to bring in change.
Well, maybe he'll bring in change, but what kind of change is it going to be? Something is really resonating for him. He's up there. Tomorrow night, he'll accept that nomination. Mark in Framingham, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, I have a bizarre theory. I've had a couple of intuitive flashes, and I'm curious to know what your panel thinks about my idea.
Ooh, intuitive flashes, first, okay.
The first is that I don't think Donald Trump wants to even live in the White House. I don't think he wants to be president and carry out the job of being president. That was the first intuitive flash. The second was, when I watched the Dallas Memorial the other day with Obama there, and it was such a solemn occasion,
yeah,
and he gave such an amazing speech full of empathy and compassion, I couldn't imagine Donald Trump in that situation in a million years. And it made me realize how many occasions Obama's had to go to like this, where he has to comfort grieving Americans. I cannot imagine Trump in that role. I cannot imagine him being fit for that role or even wanting to do that. So what do you guys think?
We'll pick it up. I guess the first question is, Mark, does the White House stay white, or does it get a gold makeover?
Or an orange one.
But there's serious questions here, too. But almost seriously, you think Donald Trump wants to live there? Or would that be his like second home, and he'll stay in Trump Tower?
I'm going to go, actually, to the more fundamental question the caller is bringing up. Yeah. Does Donald Trump really want to win? Mm-hmm. And there are times in which I wake up in the mornings after seeing the chaos and the plagiarism scandal that's gone on here at the convention and how the people can't even get embargoed speech excerpts on time and just the chaotic nature of the rollout on the vice presidential pick where it wasn't thought out. And even the point where I thought at one point that Donald Trump was going to put Newt Gingrich on his ticket. And there are some times when I do believe, and it's just only a conspiracy theory, but does he actually want to win? Is he a plant for the Democrats? Because if you ask
him,
let me just put it
this way. That's all just stuff you care about as a journalist. Maybe he doesn't care about all that. He doesn't care about the vice president except to help him win. He doesn't care about, somebody is getting fired on plagiarism, I guess, but it's not his first concern. I mean, he might say, no, I've got a... Is vision the right word? Impulse? I don't know.
Maybe everyone is wrong, but at the end of the 2012 election, every Republican, or almost every Republican, came to the conclusion, we need to do better with women. We need to do better with Latinos. We need to do better with African Americans. And what does Donald Trump end up representing? Someone who doesn't do all that well with women, doesn't do well with Latinos, mm-hmm. doesn't do well with African Americans. And so, again, there's no proof whatsoever, but there are times in which I do believe that here is someone who hasn't done what it actually takes to be able to get to the White House.
Eliana, can you picture him as president? I was talking with a big-name White House correspondent today who shall go unnamed, but saying the White House correspondents are wondering if he'll play by the established protocol at all. will he live in the White House? When he goes out, will there be press with him? Will he have press conferences of a kind that we've ever understood? Will he temper his remarks on the economy, on diplomatic arrangements? I mean, maybe Americans don't want somebody who plays by those rules, but really everybody has for as long as anybody can remember. Can you picture how he would actually live in that role?
Well, I speak from an outlet that's been on the Trump blacklist, denied credentials because of our editorial position. So it is difficult for me to imagine how he would relate to the media, of course. Mm-hmm. But I will say I was shocked by Trump's temperate, solemn, appropriate response to both the police shootings in Louisiana and in Minnesota, mm-hmm. and then to the massacre in Dallas. He came out with a statement that was completely appropriate, and then he did really what we have not seen him do the entire campaign season, which is he closed his mouth and stopped talking, and he disappeared. He canceled campaign events, and that made me think that perhaps we were seeing a new Trump who was preparing to speak on solemn occasions, say appropriate things, and remove himself from the scene when it was appropriate.
But didn't he also claim, one of these Muslims celebrating in Jersey claims that Black Lives Matter people have been chanting for, he said to pray for the killer, pray for the sniper, and I guess later nobody could find that. And he threw a kind of a grenade out the limo window as maybe he was acting.
He sent a tweet a couple of days later. I can't recall exactly what it said now, but it was not appropriate. However, we hadn't seen any kind of appropriate statement. I think After the Orlando shooting at the gay nightclub there, he congratulated himself for having predicted more terrorist events. So by comparison, it was a marked, vast improvement. And it did make me think that either there was a transformation on his part, or somebody had managed to exert more control over his public statements.
When you talked with a lot of people who think about Donald Trump, he's wanted this. He's wanted it for a long time, we can read in many places. He's imagined himself as president. This didn't just show up a year ago. Right. You know, maybe he's so hungry to fill those shoes with whatever ideology or lack of he brings that at the performance level, he'll want to, you know, not embarrass the office because it's President Trump and that's his brand.
I have to say, I am attracted to Mark's idea that this is kind of like the political version of The Producers, right? A production that's made to fail. But no, look, I think this goes back to the 2011 or the 2012 correspondence dinner when Obama humiliated him. I was sitting 30 feet from him, and I watched his face turn from a smile to marble. This is a deeply competitive guy. The thing about him, the word that I would use most to describe him that sort of defines his actions is the word legitimacy. Remember, he feels, and his son, by the way, touched on it explicitly in the speech, talking about crossing the river from Queens to Manhattan to be legitimate. Look what he questioned with Obama. Look what he's always questioning. The legitimacy of his educational record and the legitimacy of his birth.
So it's all about being legitimized for Donald Trump.
Yes.
And what does that more than the presidential seal? Let's go to Grants Pass, Oregon. And Sharon. Sharon, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to make a comment. You were talking about how black Americans and Hispanics and people with a different sexual orientation might view Trump's campaign. Let me begin by saying that I'm white, female, and I am a Trump supporter. However, one of the things that I so strongly appreciate about Trump's ideas for America is giving everyone a chance to work, to find a job, to support themselves and their families. His campaign is not limiting this to white America. I think if you're a Hispanic male or a Hispanic female or a black female, or regardless of your circumstances, the first thing you want to do is take care of yourself and your family. And I think he's going to give us a chance to do that.
Listen, Sharon, I totally get that. Everybody needs work, and people need work with good pay and all the rest. How do you think he's going to do that exactly?
Well, I think for one thing, he's got some ideas about bringing manufacturing back to America. The NAFTA treaty was not necessarily the most beneficial for American manufacturing jobs, and I think that's been proven. And I'm hopeful that we will begin to be opening some of these factories in America that they're opening in other parts of the world to manufacture products that we Americans buy. Let's make it in America with American jobs.
Sharon, that's a very fundamental desire, and I totally get it, and I completely respect it. And a lot of Americans have felt very uncertain about that. Do you have a job? Does it pay worth a hoot? Can you live on it? Everybody's worried about that. But what's the reality factor here? I mean, Glenn, can he bring those jobs back? I mean, look at Mike Pence's state. You know, NAFTA may have not have worked out well for a lot of people. TPP might or might not. But I'm looking here from the Financial Times. They're saying 1 in 6 Hoosiers in Indiana depend on exports. Okay, that's good. They shipped about $34 billion in goods last year. That's good. The farmers reaped almost $6 billion in exports in 2015. Pence has been all over the place with trade delegations. Can we start putting up, you know, big tariff demands and demand we bring jobs home without losing all that outflow?
The issue here is not anything one president can do. We are talking about 60 years of economic trends. We've gone from an industrial-based economy, went from an agricultural-based economy to an industrial-based economy to a post-industrial-based economy to a service-based economy. You want to know what the biggest loser in terms of all the bailouts of the Obama administration was? It was the automaker bailout.
The biggest loser, in what way?
TARP. I forgot what the numbers are.
The companies came back.
But they were not able to repay the entirety. The TARP bailout, even Fannie and Freddie, I think, we're able to see some nominal profit.
Yep.
The issue here is the loss of jobs has to do with wage competition overseas, and Americans can't compete with the wage competition. The other thing about it is, and I haven't seen any more recent analyses, but the truth of the matter is NAFTA apparently increased the number of jobs over the course of its life. The issue, I think, that is much harder for people to get a grip on, particularly in post-Great Recession, is the quality of those jobs and the pay of those jobs. And that's something that none of the campaigns in either party, I think, have sufficiently addressed.
But this is serious business. Eliana, there's Sharon in Grants Pass, Oregon, and she wants jobs for herself, for her family, for everybody, and she's ready to step up and believe Donald Trump because he asserts again and again he's going to bring them. He's going to bring the jobs. He's going to bring it back. Is he being fair? Is he being serious with this voter, with voters?
I think what it's fascinating to me because both parties grappled with this issue of the loss of manufacturing jobs, and the economy is improving, but people like Sharon are not feeling it yet. And, you know, the Clintons...
People are kind of fed up with that, right?
Right.
Okay, elites, you've been telling us that for 20 years, 30 years now. We're kind of tired of hearing.
And Hillary Clinton was absolutely hammered on the campaign trail for Bill Clinton's support of NAFTA, for signing NAFTA.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders succeeded in pulling her to the left on trade. And it's fascinating that we may see the nominees of both major parties essentially opposing free trade. I don't believe that Hillary Clinton actually opposes free trade, but Bernie Sanders did succeed in pulling her to the left on this. And I think what Glenn said is true, that we've had a 60-year transformation of the economy, but politicians have not succeeded in adequately communicating about this issue to voters.
Or in bringing policies that would really help out those reporters, those voters displaced by these trends.
Exactly. And I think that there's not an adequate understanding on the part of many people that these jobs are gone. They are not coming back.
It's not good enough in a democracy. You know, I mean, you have to step up and figure something out for people to do well. Bruce in Lexington, Massachusetts. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You know, I've been following Trump since the beginning, and I don't think he sees himself as Republican or a Democrat or an independent. I think he sees himself as a chairman of the board, as a businessman. And he wants to get in there and set up all his departments and sit back and make sure they run right. And unfortunately for him, he does have a history of failing.
Sometimes.
A few
casinos in Atlantic City and maybe some more. Okay, the chairman of the board metaphor. Does that work in the White House, Glenn Thrush?
Well, I think it...
The CEO.
It might work in the White House, but Donald Trump hasn't been a chairman of a board or a CEO. He has run a family-owned... Well, he's run two distinct businesses. He's run a family-owned real estate empire, which is essentially... If you're looking at him and his family, that's the way... I covered real estate in New York City.
Yeah.
It's your family. It's 10 people in a room, right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, he's run a one-man business, which is branded around his name, which is really what he is most successful at doing.
Selling the brand.
This man has not had a successful career in terms of setting up organizations and executing things competently. Look at his casinos.
How do things work? We're hearing from voters tonight who are saying, kind of, you can hear them saying, I don't care about ideology. Make it work. Does that work?
Well, I think it does. I mean, you know, getting back to the Cruz, the Cruz interview that I did last Friday.
And he'll talk tonight.
Cruz talked about setting up his campaign. It was fascinating because, and Mark will attest to this as well, Cruz really did run sort of the best by the numbers campaign pretty much in either party. I think Hillary Clinton wrote an efficient campaign.
All his ground operation.
Metrics, data, efficiency. And he established it from day one as a private equity firm, with a board that made decisions on funding.
In his mind, in his
mental
frame.
So Cruz and not Trump is the one who really modeled his stuff on a corporate model.
But he twinned that with all this social conservatism that maybe didn't work for this time. Where that takes conservatism down the road, who knows? I mean, we sat here last night with Nate Silver. He says Trump has a 38% odds of winning. That ain't nothing. It's not a majority, but we're early on here, midway in the convention right now. conservatism itself kind of on the line. Who knows what it means for the Republican Party and the country? This has been really interesting, and I'm so grateful to each of you for being here. Mark Murray, senior political editor for NBC News. Thank you so much for coming, Mark.
Thanks, Tom.
Eliana Johnson, Washington editor for the National Review. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
And Glenn Thrush, chief political correspondent for Politico. See his podcast, Off Message. Glenn, you're terrific. Thank you so much for coming by. We are live in Cleveland all this week at the Republican National Convention. We're really glad you're with us. Join us again tomorrow night when it's Donald Trump taking the stage. This is On Point.